And we're joined by Viviana Santiago, the executive director of Oxfam Brazil. Earlier this year, she joined the Lula administration as a member of the presidency council focused on sustainable development. Oxfam recently released a report titled Climate Plunder, how a powerful few are locking the world into disaster, unquote. Oxfam also submitted a petition of over a million signatures to the Brazilian government demanding that the super rich pay for climate damages. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! It's quite something to be here at the gateway of the Amazon. Viviana, let's begin with you. For our global audience, can you set the stage? Where exactly are we? What is the significance of Belém? Why is the UN Climate Summit? Why did Lula, the president of Brazil, choose to put it in this gateway city?
Thank you so much for the invitation. It's really important to us to be here with you. And talk about the importance of being here in Amazon region is talk about the vulnerability that you can see in this region. You can see how poverty affects people here, but also you can see how these people can answer the climate crisis. I think that the whole idea is about what we can have from this environment in terms of resistance, in terms of power connections with earth and nature, and how ancestrality plays an important role ensuring that we need to connect with our roots. But at the same time, we can see that these people that are fighting for survival, fighting for conservancy, are the most affected people in the world. And it's about climate crisis. And in some way, it's about to talk about climate justice. We need to understand that people that are most affected for the climate crisis are the people that did nothing to this crisis. So how can we act in terms to protect their lives and ensure that the rich polluters will pay for that?
So here we are at the mouth of the Amazon, right, in Belém. The Amazon, the lungs of the planet. Can you talk about the impacts of rising temperatures and deforestation?
Here in Brazil, and especially in this region, we can see this impact. We can see how the heat is affecting people's health, how it's almost impossible for some children go to school because schools are not prepared for this heat, even here in this region. But at certain point, in some months here, the entire country can suffer the consequences. So what we are facing right now is a climate crisis here in Brazil that is affecting the entire country. What happens in Amazon affecting Brazil as a whole? So what we need to do right now is ensure that we will have conditions to adaptations and to mitigate the risk.
Leila Salazar Lopez, put Brazil in a regional context. The significance of this country when it comes to climate change. I mean, we just had Viviana saying the people who least cause climate change are most affected by it. And also respond to President Trump, a well-known and proud climate change denier. He campaigned on the slogan, drill, baby, drill. Not sending a high-level delegation to this climate summit. It's the first time in the COP's history.
Well, thank you, Amy, for having me in Democracy Now! Really, this is about democracy, right? You opened the segment with saying that we haven't had civil society at COPs in 3 years. And so that's what we're seeing here in Brazil. We're seeing
that because we're talking about more repressive governments that didn't allow public protest.
For the last 3 years, the COPs have been in Egypt, Dubai, and Azerbaijan. The civil society presence has been very, very limited. It's been inside. And the beauty of the Forest COP, the beauty of the People's COP in Brazil is that civil society is very active, both inside and outside. And as Viviana was saying, there, you know, it's critical that what is happening here in the Amazon is at a tipping point. It's not coming, it's here. Why is that? I think we should talk about why the Amazon is at a tipping point, why the Amazon is literally burning. It's because of policy, it's because of industry, it's because of extraction, it's because of continued land grabbing, oil extraction, mineral extraction, land grabbing of indigenous people's lands. And that's why we see the mobilizations of indigenous and local communities saying, we want our land back, we want land demarcation, we want our rights respected, we want mining off of our lands, we want the Amazon free of extraction. Literally, there is a protest happening right now by a mobilization of indigenous peoples leaving the indigenous village that has over 3,500 indigenous people staying there. And that's why we're saying that this is the indigenous COP. There are more indigenous peoples here in Belém than at any other COP in history. And that is significant because indigenous peoples are the guardians of the forest. They are protecting the forest. Riverine people, campesino people, quilombolas, they are protecting the forest from the threats, from the destruction. And they've made a very significant presence here at COP. And yes, there's the absence of the U.S. government as climate deniers, but the U.S. civil society is here too. We're here very strongly, and whether our federal government denies climate, we're here to also stand with the people and also demand that the Amazon be free of extraction and that we have, you know, there is no mention of fossil fuel extraction and the fact that it is the number one cause of global greenhouse gas emissions. So there's something missing there. When we have over 1,200 fossil fuel lobbyists here, that's more than some entire country delegations. So we need to come to reality here with the fact that we need to keep oil in the ground. We've been saying this for a long time since the Paris Agreement. We're a lot closer to hearing that here at COP30. And it is the indigenous people in the local communities who are making that known, that we want the Amazon free of extraction.
And Viviana Santiago, it is those people, grassroots environmental activists, particularly indigenous, who also face the most threat, not just environmentally, but how many have been murdered in the last years? Can you talk about that violence and who's perpetrating it?
Here in Brazil, we are completely aware that Brazil is one of the most dangerous countries in the world for civil society activists, especially environmental activists. And the murder of civil society activists is completely related with land, with extractivism, with the protection of the forest. People who are right now here in Brazil talking about it are in danger. And there is not enough conversations about it, not from the entire society, because we understand that the interests that are behind of this reality are completely aligned with fossil fuel, with the new economy, with this model of sustainability. And here in Brazil, we will not face any improvement in this context if we are not open to discuss it with the private sectors who are really behind of these realities, because in the ground, people are being murdered because they are trying to protect their lands, their lifestyle, their rivers.
Now, you're really wearing two hats, though I'm the one wearing the hat in this show. Your two hats, you're head of Oxfam Brazil, and you just joined the Lula administration as in his presidency advisory council. Just ahead of COP, Lula's government approved new oil exploration near the mouth of the Amazon River, while Lula has backed a 900-kilometer highway redevelopment that environmental and indigenous groups say would provide access for extractive industries and threaten huge new areas of of forest. Can you comment on this as a person who's so often been on the outside, but you're on the inside now as well?
Yeah, it was really devastating for all of us, these decisions. We, as civil society, we fight a lot against it. But I understand that in this government, they think that there is a way to finance transition from fossil fuels. Personally, I don't agree. I completely disagree that it can be a path for us, because this path previously led us on this reality that we are facing right now. It's generating a lot of resistance in the entire country and generating solidarity in the entire world. I think that it's still time to change this reality. It really affects and really increases the threat against indigenous people and traditional communities in Amazonas. There is no way that these activities can't generate more impact, more danger, and I think that it is still time to change these decisions. The movement right now in Brazil from civil society is really trying to change this decision, because it's impossible to keep Brazil on track with this situation right now.
Leila Salazar Lopez, can you talk about the role of indigenous people being excluded from the talks? And you've been here for the last week. If you can talk about the state of the talks right now here in Belém, we're inside COP30, inside the UN Climate Summit, where these negotiations are taking place. And for people who don't understand what happens every year, the significance of this being called an action summit.
The significance of it being called an action summit is because we need action for the Amazon. We need action for the global climate and for the communities. We hear a lot of talk about direct finance. There's a lot of talk about finance, but for indigenous peoples who we work in solidarity with, it's about direct finance to indigenous peoples, not only to governments, not only through corporations and intermediaries, but directly to indigenous people so that they have the sovereignty to make their decisions on what they want to do with their land. And that's why we see, you know, when there are people excluded, we see here in Brazil, people aren't used to saying no. And the Munduruku people who traveled from their communities, from their territories, which are threatened by illegal mining, which are threatened by an industrial waterway to transport soy, which are threatened by a Ferrogrão, the soy railway, to transport soy to Europe and China. When we see them coming in buses, in ferries, in boats, in giant caravans, they're not coming to stand outside. They're coming to put some pressure and some heat on the governments, the negotiators, and that's what they came to do. When we saw the COP being shut down on Friday, it was the Munduruku people saying, no one in, no one out. Why? Because they said, we want our land demarcated. We do not want this Ferrogrão, this soy railway. We do not want this waterway. And the COP president came out. And Marina Silva came out, and Minister Sonia Guajajara came out and met with them. And that, you know, that wasn't the plan, but that's democracy. And that was what is so beautiful here in Brazil. And as a result, you know, the Brazilian government said, you know, we're going to put a hold on this Ferrogrão. We're not going forward on this soy railway for Cargill and ADM and Bunge and all these multinational corporations to feed animals, not people. We're not going forward with this without people's consent. And that's democracy, and that's the power of the indigenous movement here in Brazil.
In fact, there is an indigenous march going on right now, right outside of COP. But the level of negotiations and the countries that are playing a key role, if you can explain sort of an insider's look as well.
Well, honestly, I have not been on so much on the inside. I've been more on the outside. But I do know that from the indigenous caucus, one of the victories is that there is mention of mining. There is, and that's That has never happened at a COP. There is a mention of mining as a cause of climate change and that there needs to be free, prior, and informed consent. And there's also a mention of discussions and a mention of indigenous peoples in voluntary isolation. That means uncontacted peoples. There's still uncontacted peoples here in the Amazon, and that is one of the major demands of the indigenous movement, that the lands of indigenous people in voluntary isolation in particular need to be free from any kind of extraction.
People to understand, and let me put this question to Viviana Santiago. Here you are in Brazil, head of Oxfam Brazil. What isolated communities are? People who voluntarily choose, communities that voluntarily choose to be isolated, and what that means. It's a really formal government designation and how the government protects them.
I think that isolated indigenous communities are the most beautiful thing in the entire world, because we can see how these people has decided to live according their beliefs, according their traditions. They really believe that they don't need this contact. They don't want this contact. And the way that they are framing their cosmovision is based on their own history and completely connected with ancestrality. Here in Brazil, they are protected by law. They are protected, and we can ensure also this protection because they are more vulnerable to disease than the other people and communities. So avoid and really prevent people from outside to be there is a duty of the government here in Brazil. But their lands are super valued here in Brazil. And that's why to address mining during COP, it's important. Because right now, because of the transitions, we are facing all the time the importance of the minerals. But there's not good mining. So when we are talking about the importance of these minerals, we are talking about mining, and we are again putting these lands in the center of this process and making them more vulnerable than before. And I think that right now, Brazilian government must ensure total protections, and it can be done by protect their lands. If you protect the land, you protect the people.
There are more indigenous people here at this COP30 than there have been at any UN climate summit. I'm wondering, before we wrap up, if you can talk about President Lula's proposal of tropical forests forever. If you can explain, and maybe Leila, you can too, talk about Lula's proposal to pay countries not to deforest.
I'll start. I can say that in our perspective as Oxfam, we understand that it's really innovative. This mechanism, it's really an innovation from COP presidents, from Brazilian presidents. But we also understand that there would be faster ways to achieve the same result. We believe that the global taxations on wealth and sectors that are polluting the world right now would be more effective and fast. The amount of money that is available for communities, it starts on 20%, but we understand that it would be a start. But indigenous peoples are asked for at least half of the fund. So there is a simple way, and we can do it, taxing the rich polluters, taxing the sectors that are polluting more, and the money, it can be led to the local communities.
Leila, we spoke to a Jamaican, a British climate activist when the hurricane hit Jamaica. And she said, rather than naming hurricanes, you know, Hurricane Melissa, Hurricane John, why don't you name them after oil companies? And I'm just wondering, Leila, as we wrap up, the significance of Trump not sending a high-level delegation to this summit, the first time that American government has not. I mean, there are a number of senators and Congress members who do believe in climate change who are here representing the government but not representing Trump. Do you see this actually as an opportunity that the administration will not be shaping what goes on, or are they doing it in other ways, through the fossil fuel lobbyists, for example?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, while the federal government is not here, civil society is here, and subnational states were here. I mean, the California governor was here. Various representatives of the state of California were here. And we're very happy to have been collaborating with Senator Josh Becker, who led an initiative in the state of California to investigate California's reliance on Amazon crude. Because over half of the Amazon crude that comes out of Ecuador, which has had an amazing election yesterday for the rights of nature and for democracy, over half of the oil that comes out of Ecuador comes to California. So we're looking into, as a part of the just transition in California, phasing out Amazon crude. But we also need to phase out crude in Kern County and offshore in California. And so we need to see, we're seeing climate leadership from state levels, not the federal government, but I'm sure, you know, with Trump's and other countries' desire to get every last drop of oil, I'm sure they're supporting the fossil fuel industry lobbyists that are here present at COP.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation all week because we're here broadcasting from COP30, the UN Climate Summit. The gateway city of Belén and the gateway to the Amazon. Leila Salazar-Lopez, thanks so much for joining us, Executive Director of Amazon Watch. And Viviana Santiago, Executive Director of Oxfam Brazil, now in the Lula government, part of the advisory presidential council. Coming up, Asad Raymond, Chief Executive of Friends of the Earth. Stay with us. Protesters chanting during Saturday's march on COP30 here in Belém, Brazil. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit from the Brazilian city of Belém. It's the gateway to the Amazon. To look at the state of the negotiations and more, we're joined by Asad Raymond, the Chief Executive of Friends of the Earth, longtime climate justice campaigner, previously Executive Director at War on Want. We welcome you back to Democracy Now! Thanks so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure, Amy.
So you've been here through the summit. Explain what we should understand. What are the negotiations that are taking place? What is the theme of this COP30?
So just to take a step back in first, obviously we're meeting here when the very rules-based system, whether it's from Gaza to climate, is under threat. Well, obviously, we've seen the rise of far-right, authoritarianism and fascism, Donald Trump and climate denialism have been one. And this weaponizing of anti-Muslim, anti-migrant and anti-climate being part of the backdrop. And that's been one of the sort of drivers here about how do you celebrate 10 years of Paris, 30 years of COP, to show that actually multilateralism matters and implementation matters. Look, we've heard from the ICJ that there is a legal and a moral obligation for countries to act, both on mitigation and adaptation. They have a responsibility not only for the polluter pays in doing their fair share, but also to do no harm.
And of course, the ICJ is the International Court of Justice at The Hague.
So absolutely. So I would say there are three issues that are crossing every negotiating room here. One is fairness. How do the people, whether they're in Kingston, Manila or Gaza, celebrate if impacts are happening to them from extreme weather impacts to floods? What happens in terms of equity? Who's doing their bit? Who's missing? And of course, the United States not doing their fair share, but also rich developed countries not delivering the scale of ambition that is required. And then the critical question of finance. We all know finance is needed. And what we saw in Baku last year was, you know, a lot of promises on private finance, on mobilizing. But really what is required is who's actually going to provide the support. And so the cost of inaction we know is running in trillions. Will there be money here? And some of those negotiations, of course, are not happening here in Belém. They're happening in Nairobi at this very same moment when there is a debate and discussions going on about a UN tax convention. And the very countries that are refusing to pay for climate finance here are also blocking action that would provide the hundreds of billions that are needed. Look, Brazil's government came here and said they've got what they call the Fab Four, provision of finance, making sure that unilateral measures such as trade measures are equal. Can they close the ambition gap? And can there be transparency? Not only in reporting what countries are doing, but also on the key question of finance. We've heard for a long time lots of words from developed countries saying we're providing lots of money, but when we lift the hood, we know that it's a lot of double counting. A lot of that finance isn't very real, so we need transparency on finance. The negotiations are still continuing, and now ministers will start to meet, ministers from both developed countries and developed countries, to close the gap on what is called the seven key issues. Those will be the global stocktake. How close are we to meeting the ambition needed on 1.5? The critical issue of global goal on adaptation, how do we adapt to the fact that the world is changing? Extreme weather, inequality, ecosystems collapsing. What we're going to do about the just transition? How do we ensure we have a plan about the transition that works for people, communities, countries and workers? And then, of course, making sure whether it's in mitigation, technology and finance, including on gender, that there is progress. So those things are going to happen. The hope is there actually is some really concrete roadmaps here. We've heard a lot about global goal on adaptation, a critical issue for developing countries. We had 5,000 indicators. They got down to 1,000 indicators. We're now down to 100 indicators. But indicators without the finance, without the means to implement, will just be meaningless. So what developing countries are saying here is we need a roadmap on adaptation. On the Just Transition Work Programme, there's a demand. It's been echoed by civil society and by the developing countries, the G77, saying we need a Belém action mechanism. This sounds like a technical term, but really what it means is that there will be not just coordination, but actually a concrete plan that allows people to plan about how we manage this change and ensure everybody has a right to live with dignity and harmony with our planet. Now, the third thing is on fossil fuels. Now, fossil fuels themselves aren't in these negotiations as such, but there are countries coming here, like Colombia, that's saying, we've got a roadmap. We can ensure that we can move away from fossil fuels. But that, of course, requires us to have finance. It requires us to understand the diversification for lots of countries who are relying on fossil fuels. And, of course, recognizing that for many countries, including developing countries, they're trapped in a cycle of debt, which means that they keep having to exploit their fossil fuels. So if we want to end that, we need a plan on that as well.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for today, but we are here all week. We're talking about the climate catastrophe and what people are doing about it. I want to thank Asad Rehman, now chief executive of Friends of the Earth. That does it for our show as we broadcast from the UN COP30 Climate Summit in the Brazilian city of Belém, the gateway to the...
You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby.
isn't the home of Burnaby Rock, CJSF's Lux Rock Electronic Show. 2 hours of relative power each and every Friday, 6 to 8 p.m., and repeats every Thursday, 10 to midnight, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Do it.